Hey guys, I hope everyone is doing well. So a few super quick updates. Number one, I need to spread the word to everyone that we got a puppy, and I'm super excited about it. He's a 3-month-old rescue lab mix. He is absolutely adorable, and his name is Gordy. I am going to post a few pictures of him on Facebook for your viewing pleasure, so look for that soon. All right, update number two. Only if you are enjoying listening to Crime Time Tea Time, if you could possibly leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, I would forever be grateful to you. And lastly, update number three. Although it seems that I have been totally MIA for the last month, I swear I haven't been. I've actually been putting a lot of time into growing Crime Time Tea Time on TikTok. So if you aren't familiar with TikTok, check it out when you get a chance. All you need to do is download the app and search for Crime Time Tea Time and you will find me. So I checked this morning and we have over 1.6 million views and just under 20,000 followers. So I'm really, really stoked about that. It brings me so much happiness to get this extra exposure out there for these cold cases especially. Which is the entire purpose of why I'm doing this, to hopefully spark a memory in someone that could help solve one of these open cases. So for those who aren't familiar, TikTok is different than a normal podcast. In podcasting, I can take as much time as I need to explain something to the listener. But on TikTok, you only have a maximum of 60 seconds to record. So I've been doing these very condensed versions of the story. So no fluff, no opinions, no comedy, no extras, just the bare bones of the story. However, the other day, a gentleman reached out to me about his sister's cold case, which is where the story you are about to hear from here came from. There's so much behind the scenes with this case. I just had to do a full podcast on it so you guys could hear the full story. Okay, so that being said, you know the dealio. If you are ready for a crazy wild ride, sit back and buckle up, grab your cup of tea, coffee, beer, soda, water, whatever, because this is the story of Karen Denise Wells. So Karen Wells actually went by her middle name of Denise. She was a 23-year-old single mom who, at the time of this story, was living in Haskell, Oklahoma. Denise was truly beautiful. She was 5'6", 115 pounds, with blonde hair and blue-green eyes, and seriously the most beautiful smile you have ever seen. In April of 1994, Denise receives a phone call from her longtime childhood friend, Melissa Shepherd, asking Denise if she could help her out with something. I know what you just thought, which is, well, what did she need help with? Now, I'm sure Melissa told Denise what she needed help with, but for whatever reason, and I know this is going to drive you nuts, that information was not given to the media by the police or from the police. So the only information we know is that Melissa asked Denise for help and that it involved Denise driving from Haskell, Oklahoma to Bergen, New Jersey, which is where Melissa was living at the time. I have read, no joke, probably 20 articles on this case, and I have yet to understand what type of help Melissa was seeking from Denise. Regardless of the reason that Melissa asked Denise to drive from Haskell, Oklahoma to Bergen, New Jersey, on Sunday, April 10th, at 1994, Denise packed her overnight bag, dropped her baby off at her parents' house, and started the 21-hour drive to Bergen, New Jersey, to help out her longtime childhood friend, Melissa. Okay, so Denise plans on being gone for 4 days.
Now, remember, it's a just under a 21-hour drive. So she did not plan on hanging out. You know what I mean? She intended on driving out there, maybe catching up on a couple hours rest, turning around, coming right back home. There are a lot of unknowns on the events that followed, but let's first look at the facts. Now, remember, the year is 1994. So for any younger listeners, this statement means a lot. There were no cell phones then. I know that is seriously hard to even imagine, but it's true. We were not able to communicate with people the way we do now. So even though we're only talking 25 years ago, times have changed so much from then when it comes to technology. So if you were going on a road trip, you would usually call the person before you left and told them your expected time of arrival. That is it. Now, gas stations, of course, had pay phones. So if you needed to use it, you know, you could. But the general rule of thumb, at least in our family growing up, is that unless your plans were going to change, you just kept on rolling. And again, I know it's just truly a different world. So as an example, if you were going on a trip to visit a friend and I told her I'd be there around 5, the only reason I would call her from a payphone or a gas station is if that time was going to vary for whatever reason. So quick, short personal story. I grew up in Michigan and my mom's family lived in Ohio. So a few times a year, we would drive down or they would drive up for a visit. Anyways, one winter, and honestly, it was probably legit very close to 1994, my mom, sister, and I were driving back to Michigan from a long weekend trip in Ohio. I don't remember which month it was, but it was winter and there was supposed to be a horrible winter storm coming in. So my mom, of course, wanted to make sure we beat the storm, so we packed up all of our stuff super early that morning, and we headed out for the 5-hour trip home. Well, the storm came sooner than we expected, and the roads were absolutely horrible. I remember the look of terror on my mom's face when the roads were so bad that you literally could not see in front of you. We couldn't tell if we were even on the road or not. It was absolutely terrifying. At one point, I remember somebody hitting my mom's car and we just kept driving. We didn't even stop because it was so, so dangerous. We wouldn't even have known if we were pulled over on the shoulder or not. It's called a whiteout. And unless you have personally been in one, there's no way to describe it. Long story short, there was a 150 car pileup on the interstate. And because of that, the Department of Transportation shut down the interstate and forced everybody into this random high school that the Red Cross had opened for us. So the Red Cross brought in food for everyone, and we had to sleep there for the night. They gave us these little mats, and we all slept in the gym side by side. Isn't that so funny, too, now that in 2020, like, my mind went right to COVID, and I'm like, oh my gosh, imagine all the COVID being spread around. Anyway, my poor mom had to wait in line behind the other 10 million other people to use a payphone so she could call my dad and tell him what was happening. So my entire point to this story is imagine how my dad must have felt. So his wife and his 2 kiddos were supposed to be home from a 5-hour road trip, you know, not only hours ago, you haven't heard from them, and the news is reporting this major 150 car pileup right on the interstate that they were supposed to be traveling through. So this would never happen nowadays. I mean, the storm most certainly could, but the lack of communication wouldn't have. We would have had the capability to update my dad every 5 minutes had we wanted to. Anyways, so keep this in mind as we keep going through the story. All right, so We know Denise left Haskell, Oklahoma on Sunday, April 10th, 1994. The next communication between the two girls, Denise and Melissa, is on Tuesday, April 12th at 1994, around 7 o'clock. So Denise calls Melissa from the Pike Motel in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Remember, Denise did not plan on stopping in Carlisle. So the fact that she called Melissa from this random motel is substantial. Denise tells Melissa that she's freaking exhausted from being on the road for 17 hours. She's hungry and she wants sleep. She told Melissa that she was going to McDonald's to get food and then was coming back to the motel to get some sleep. Now, allegedly, it's at this point that Denise also tells Melissa she must have been super frustrated. She tells Melissa she does not plan on driving all the way to New Jersey. I think she was just right, like super duper frustrated with the drive. And she apparently had gotten lost a few times. She was just tapped out. So my husband and I drive to South Carolina to visit family often. That's only a 10-hour drive, and by the time we get there, we're usually grouchy and super tired. So I can't imagine how Denise was feeling after a 17-hour drive by herself. Okay, so next thing we know for certain is that around midnight, Melissa shows up to the motel Denise had checked into, accompanied by two male friends that apparently Melissa had met at the strip club that she worked at. I don't say that as a jab either. I just want to share all the facts so that you have the information you need to form an opinion on what happened to Denise. I don't care what you do to earn your money, so long as you aren't hurting someone, do whatever you want, in my opinion. What I do find odd, though, is that you haven't seen your, quote, longtime childhood friend in years, and you decide to bring these two randos that you just met at the bar with you to see her. Anyways, the plan was always for Denise to drive straight to Bergen, New Jersey. At first, I found it very suspicious that Melissa got in her car and drove 3 hours from Bergen, New Jersey, to the motel that Denise had checked into for seemingly no reason at all. But then I read that Denise was frustrated and more or less said, I'm not coming all the way to New Jersey. You can meet me in PA. So if that is true, it makes sense to me why Melissa drove to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I still think it's strange that she didn't wait until the morning to make the drive, but who knows? She hadn't planned on driving to Pennsylvania, so maybe she had plans the following day back in New Jersey. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. Okay. So it's just before midnight, and Melissa and these two guys show up at the Pike Motel. Melissa knocks on Denise's door, but gets no answer. She then contacts the motel manager and asks if they will open the door, which they agree to. In the room, they find Denise's overnight bag with her clothes, belongings, and the room key inside. The bed was neatly made and had not been slept in. Now, I'm not sure if I'm looking too deep into this, but what's your take on the room key being left in the room? It's at this point that Melissa calls the police to report Denise missing. And can we just pause to talk about this room key? Am I making too big of a deal about this? What does this mean? Did she leave in a hurry? Or was it just an innocent mistake and she left the stupid key in the room by accident? You know what I mean? Let me know what you think. I don't know. It really has tripped me up, and I think I'm probably just making too big of a deal about it, but it bothers me and I want to know. Anyhow, okay. So you would think this is where the story starts to fade out, right? Wrong. From this point on, the story just gets stranger, and here's why I say it. Later that morning, police find Denise's rental car, a 1993 Plymouth Acclaim abandoned in the westbound lane on Route 274 in New Germantown, Pennsylvania, which is 35 miles from the Pike Motel. And when I say abandoned in the westbound lane, that is exactly what I mean. The car was in the middle of the freaking lane, as in it wasn't even pulled over onto the shoulder of the road. It was literally stopped in the middle of the lane. The driver and passenger side doors were wide open. The vehicle was scratched and caked with mud. The car had run out of gas and the battery was dead. In the car, police found empty soda bottles, a pair of shoes, maps, and some French fries, which indicates to me that she did stop at McDonald's to eat. In a nearby ditch, they found Denise's change purse with a few dollars in cash and a super tiny bit of marijuana. Additionally, the odometer indicated that the vehicle had 600 to 700 unexplained miles on it. Again, here we are thinking this has to be the weirdest part of the story, right? Wrong again. The next piece of evidence, in my opinion, is the most mind-blowing. As part of their normal investigation, police pull phone records for Melissa. Are you ready for this bombshell piece of the puzzle? Melissa's home phone records reveal that she received a phone call from Carlisle, Pennsylvania, 17 hours before Denise arrived in Carlisle. How is that even freaking possible? Remember, Carlisle was an unplanned, spur-of-the-moment stop for Denise because she was exhausted. When police asked for an explanation as to who called her from Carlisle 17 hours before her friend goes missing from the area, and Melissa could not provide an answer. Apparently, the person who called stayed on the phone with Melissa's voicemail. We don't know what, if anything, the person said. We also don't know how long the person was connected to the voicemail. All the police have shared is that the caller was on the phone with her voicemail. Oh my gosh, I have so many freaking questions right now. Who was the caller? What did they say? How long were they on the phone for? Did they leave an actual message or just quietly sit on the call as the tape rolled, you know? Most importantly, why was Melissa getting a phone call from a location her friend goes missing in 17 hours later? Even if Melissa had set Denise up, how could she have possibly known Denise was going to stop in Carlisle, you know? All right, so I guess this is the right time to share that according to police, soon after this information is revealed, Melissa stops speaking to the cops. And according to every article I've read, to this day, police are not sure of Melissa's whereabouts. They didn't have enough evidence to charge her with anything, so they let her go. All right, so now we know the facts of the case. The question is, what happened to Denise? Again, the police have not reported a ton about this case to the media. A lot of what is talked about online is people like us bouncing ideas off each other, trying to make sense of what we think happened. In my research, here are the three theories that police worked. One, the first is that Melissa set Denise up. The people who support this theory believe that Melissa talked Denise into either picking up or dropping off drugs and then robbed her. The police point out in almost every single article you'll read that Denise was, quote, unemployed. Is there any way of confirming this theory? I don't know. The folks who support this theory also point out that police did in fact find a small amount of pot in the ditch outside of her vehicle. Don't get me wrong, just because you might smoke a little pot, which we don't even know for sure if it was Denise's, does not for a single second mean that you're a drug runner. But the point I think they're trying to make is that Denise wasn't totally against it either. Okay, that's theory one. Theory two. All right, so the second theory is that Melissa had nothing to do with Denise's disappearance whatsoever. Here's how this theory plans out. Denise gets to Carlisle and calls Melissa just like Melissa said happened. She goes to McDonald's just like she planned. When she leaves McDonald's is when things go south. Denise gets turned around when she's trying to get back to the motel and gets herself lost. Remember what year it is. There's no Google Maps. The thought is, at some point, she realized she was going the wrong way and tried to turn around, causing the scratches and dirt on the car as she drove off the road a bit. You know what I mean? To turn around. She ends up running out of gas and is picked up by someone who kidnaps her. My husband strongly supports this theory, actually. The only problem I have with this theory is that it doesn't answer the question of who the heck called Melissa's phone from Carlisle 17 hours before Denise arrived. How could this possibly be? If this truly is a coincidence that some random telemarketer or something called Melissa's home phone that day, it would have to be the biggest coincidence I've ever seen in my life. But who knows? You know, it is possible. All right, the third theory will be new information to you. Apparently, Denise was dating a married man. This in itself doesn't give a whole lot of context to our story. What makes this information interesting is that according to the wife of Denise's boyfriend, Denise called her around Thanksgiving. So we're talking 7 months later, and allegedly tells her that she got married and ran away with a new husband and was doing fine. Right? Okay. For whatever reason, though, the police don't seem to put much effort into this theory. Okay, guys, this is all we know about Denise's case. Police are certain about two things. One, Denise met some type of foul play. And two, someone out there knows what happened to Karen Denise Wells. If that person is you, please, please reach out to the Pennsylvania State Police at 717-249-2121. God bless her family, who is still desperately looking for answers. Denise's mom was quoted as saying, "Not knowing what happened to her is unending agony." Again, if you know anything, please be the person to help put an end to this quarter of a century-year-old nightmare. Thanks for listening, everyone, and remember your ABCs. Be aware of your surroundings, be brave if you're uncomfortable, and be careful. Take care, guys. Have a great one.